Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Remember. What an interesting word, remember. Remember. It's as if to put back a member where it belongs, you know what I mean? He was a member of the organization, and then he came back another time, and we remembered him. Right? We made him a member. Is that like dismember? You throw somebody out? Remember. Funny word, member. Comes from memory. When I was a youth, last week, I worked at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine, where we studied the chemistry of memory. We wanted to know what makes memory work. Why do people remember and why do people forget? And we learned that it was all based on protein synthesis. Now, this is important because it's going to relate to you and how you love, the very love that you experience. So what we did was we studied mice. And these mice were given acetoxycyclohexamide, which was a thing, came from a cactus, and it turned out that if you gave the mice the acetoxycyclohexamide, it impaired their memory. They couldn't remember a maze that they had run earlier. Whereas the ones who got the water, the saline, they remembered. So when they were trying to figure out what was it that was different between the people who got the acetoxycyclohexamide and the ones who didn't, is that they were actually had more protein. Protein synthesis at the synapse. At the end of your synapse, there is a protein that you have to be able to produce. This protein, once you produce it, enables you to secrete acetylcholine. Acetylcholine becomes a bath through which electrical charge goes, and therefore you can have nerve transmission. If you don't have nerve transmission from one nerve to another, you can't function. And if you don't have a lot of nerve transmission, you can't remember. The deeper the nerve transmission, the more you remember. Okay, simple basic science. Acetoxycyclohexamide. One of my favorite things. I have it every morning. Turns out that you had to distill something like two cactuses to get enough for one mouse. It was an amazing thing we did back then. So anyway, the interesting thing about memory is, so when you remember something, like think back about something in your childhood, and I'm going to ask you to remember the face of your mother, or the face of your grandmother. More odds that she will not be with us any longer, right? Your grandmother? Can you see the face of your grandmother? Can you see what she looks like? Let me ask you something. Are you remembering the face of your grandmother as you saw it or as you saw it in a photograph? Is it the actual picture of her or is it a picture of her? Is it the actual memory of her or is it the picture of her? Do you remember what she felt like? Do you remember something else about Grandma? What did she smell like? Memories. Well, here's the tricky thing about memories. It turns out that some of the most recent research suggests that we can't possibly have a good memory of anything. It's almost always suggesting that, let's say you had a childhood experience, and you wanted to remember this childhood experience. As soon as you remember this childhood experience, you have to ask who is remembering it. So let's say you had a party when you were 3 years old, a great birthday party when you were 3 years old, and it was a wonderful birthday party, and your mother threw a party for you, and you had lots of balloons and lots of colors and candles, and you're barely verbal, you know what I mean? You can't really talk very much. You have a limited vocabulary. You're 3 years old. A lot of kids are around. There are all kinds of presents, and it's a big party. It should make an impression on you. You should remember your third birthday party, right? But if you try to remember it, are you three when you're remembering it? Or are you, whatever you are now, 30, remembering 3? And could you possibly remember the thrill of being 3 when you're 30? Because what would you remember? You'd have to become the child. You'd have to dip into that childhood. It has to be a very powerful experience to bring you back to a memory where you actually feel that very age and have the experience that you had back then. Other than that, it's just like you've taken a photograph of a memory. Let me explain. If you had a trauma, and the trauma was deep, and you recall that trauma, as you recalled it, you would regress. Regress means that you would go back in time and become that child. See, you would actually feel it. So some people in therapy can be talking about traumas they had in childhood. I remember the day my father died. I remember the day, and they talk about it. And as they talk about it in the chair while they're talking to me or to a therapist, they become that little person. And my daddy's gone, and, you know, and this is the way I feel, and so on and so forth. So that's one form of memory, which is reliving the memory. Another form of memory is looking at yourself as the child having the memory. So it's like you've taken a photograph of the incident. And here's what they say. They say that every time you remember something from an adult place, that you remember something that happened back in time, you've added something to it. You've changed it in some way. You've brought to it your 30-year-old brain. And that you've added different kind of chemistry to it. And so every time we remember something, we remember it differently. Therefore, the original memory is rarely, rarely ever accurate. Why is that important? It's rarely accurate. Is it important because, why is it important? It's important because we, strangely enough, base our life on memories that are false. Yes, we do. Psychology is built on a profession that may lead back to false memories. For example, you can remember the day your mother threw the cup of coffee at your dad. But your mind is a funny thing. It may have been that your dad threw the cup of coffee at mom. And it could have been they threw water. And it could have been not a cup. And it could have been not your parents. But your mind going back retrieves and recreates. And then you base something on the memory. So I know a young boy, I remember he was being beaten and he was very badly hurt. And he went home and he called his family for help. And his family said, we can't be bothered with you right now. So this young boy who was very badly beaten lay on a floor. And he remembers very well that he laid on the floor and he tried to call his mother and he tried to call his father and nobody would come to his help. And he laid there and he said, this is it. I'm alone. I will trust nobody from now on. I'm on my own. And that kid has that very vivid memory of that moment. And he made a decision, I'm alone. Well, maybe he did get beaten up by the gang. But maybe he didn't make the call. Maybe he didn't phone his mother. Maybe he just knew she wasn't there. Maybe he didn't phone his father. Maybe he just knew dad wasn't there. It could be any part of the story could be wrong. And he could have based a life decision on it. Because it was more comfortable never to even reach out to people than it would have been to try to reach out and fail. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. This is leading us to understanding love. Because a lot of the love that people feel is based on a memory of what they think love should be based on what was or was not in childhood. Let's try to get that for you. What is love? Love is somebody who embraces you, who wants to take care of you, who shares with you, who's near you, who touches you. Where'd you get that idea that that's what love is? Because when I was a child, you say to yourself, there was a level of safety I felt. There was a place I felt. There was a beautiful experience I had that was so beautiful. Or it was an idea of an experience that I wanted to have. And it was so beautiful that I'm looking to replicate that. I'm looking to find that safety, that feeling, that wonderful, wonderful feeling of being connected, like I was as a kid, or like I hoped I was as a kid. So we take a picture of this, and, you know, very often I meet young men who try to be men, and they're trying to be men for their wives, you know, they're trying to be a man for their children. And I say, so you didn't have a father. Where'd you get the idea of where a man was, what a man is? Because they make up rules. They say things like, you know, a real man has to not cry. A real man has to go out and earn a living. I say, where'd you get these ideas? They said, well, basically they made them up. Because they went back in childhood and they tried to find an image of it or a model of it, and they couldn't find it, so they made it up in your mind. You made up a lot of things in your mind. You made up what love is in your mind. You can make up what God is in your mind. We can make up so much stuff that when we report what we know, there's a lot of doubt as to whether it's real or not. I don't know if my memories are real. I'm pretty sure they are, but maybe they're not. Maybe everything I remember is not real. Okay. Maybe I do remember some real, but maybe I've changed the story a little bit. Maybe I've glorified. Maybe I've made people bigger than they were. Maybe I've made people worse than they were. Maybe somehow it enhanced me to change the story a little. Think about your own story. I have a lot of people who come to see me. They've had parents who died. And they tell me about how wonderful their childhood was. And you listen to this story, and it's a horror story. It's like they were abandoned, they were beaten, they were tortured, they were, you know. They said, but my parents loved me a lot. And you could just see how they've retrieved in their mind all the stuff that they remember, and they forget the pain. They left that part out. So if you have the capacity to change in your mind your memory of what nurturance was, what love was, or what bad things were. Maybe we remember maybe all the bad things that happened we've distorted in some way. Maybe it didn't happen. Doesn't it make you crazy to think about that? Well, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to be talking about memory. So here's one concept of memory that's recent that's very interesting. So every time you go back and you remember something, you bring to it a new protein synthesis because you're doing it from this adult level that you're at now remembering. So therefore, you're remembering a copy of a memory. And then the next time you remember it, you remember the copy of the copy of the memory. Somebody sent me a recent photograph of a friend on the internet, an old friend from a long time ago. And I looked at that photograph and I remembered that friend, but I remembered that friend exactly as the photograph was. See, I didn't really remember the friend, I remembered the photograph of the friend. And then just the other day I was thinking about that friend and I thought about the photograph. I didn't think about the friend. Our mind will play that trick. We will not remember and we will remember, and we have tricks in our memory, and it relates to our selection of love and people. Who do we select? Why do we select? What do we select is based on the past. Now, I have found ways to bring people to age regression where they can relive original experiences. And it's a very tricky thing because sometimes what they do is they go somewhere and it looks real, but it's not real. But I've learned that over time, but it's very rare. Mostly whatever anybody reports as a memory is inaccurate. Just to give you an example, take any two people who are arguing. and you're arguing with your husband or your wife about what you said to each other, and you say, you know, you said that I should not go out that night. And when she says that to you, you say to yourself, I never said any such thing. And you say to her, no, I didn't. You said I shouldn't go out. And she says, no, you said it. Well, is she lying to you just to make an impression on you? Is she lying to you just to get power over you? No, she may actually remember that you said it, and not she. Memories are very funny. They get in the way. Sometimes I think the advantage of getting Alzheimer's, you know? Well, not Alzheimer's, because that's dementia, but getting older and losing memory is that you're really losing some false stuff, not some real stuff. Interesting concept. 212-209-2900 is our number here. Michael, we're going to be taking calls early today because I want to talk to people about their memories and how their memories relate to love. How does your memory of your past affect your love and your ability to love nowadays? How does your memory of your past contaminate your love and your ability to love? Do you look back and say to yourself, I once had a very cruel father, and therefore I will never love anybody like him. I once had a very sickly mother, therefore I'll never have anybody like her. Is that what you do with your mind? Is your mind really feeding you and serving you in that way? Or is your mind tricking you just because you really want to make a choice, but you don't have the nerve to make it? You know, like maybe you just don't want to be with men. Maybe you just don't want to be in a relationship. Maybe you just don't want to be in love. Who knows? We're going to have to take a look at this. It's a very lot of questions, huh? Armand DeMille here with you with the Positive Mind. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Armand. This is Nelson.
Hello, Nelson. Nice to meet you.
Well, we've talked before a while back. Talking about memories, today I'm remembering my mother's passing. She passed away last year at this time.
Can I ask you something, Nelson?
Sure.
You mean she died?
Yes, she died.
Why did you say passing?
Because I didn't want to say die.
Yes, I know. And why don't you want to say die?
Because then it means it's an ending.
All right, so see what happens. So what we'll do is we'll take a very word to make ourselves more comfortable, we'll change a word. A year ago? Yeah, we'll change a word. We'll change the word death to passing, just so that we could change our emotions. Because if you say death, you feel the real thing. But if you say passing, you don't feel it all.
No, that's basically pretty true.
Tell me about your mother's death.
Well, I didn't find out till 4 days later. She passed away in her sleep.
She died in her sleep.
Yes, she died in her sleep.
Good for you. Good for you, Nelson. Good for you.
She died alone. I had to go into the apartment and see her.
Her
she
dying,
died with her eyes open.
She died alone, meaning that you should have been there? Do you feel somewhat responsible, like you should have been there for her?
I don't see how I could have prevented it.
Right.
I don't see how I could have prevented it.
But do you wish you had been there?
I do sometimes.
Yeah. Tricky mind, the way it works. So your mom died. Died with her eyes open, died lying on the bed. They discovered her days later. What did she die of, a heart attack?
That's what they ruled it as, yes.
Kind of sounds like it.
Yeah, I didn't have an autopsy done.
And did you discover her body? Did you go up to see her?
Yes. I finally saw her right before they took her, they transported her out of the apartment.
Must have been terribly scary.
Well, that whole time before that was because she was had a blanket over her. The police were there, and right before they took her body, the gentleman asked me if I would like to see her.
Mm-hmm.
And with some trepidation, I pulled back the covers and saw how she looked.
You know why that was important? Because you needed to know she died. You see, if you hadn't looked, you would have never really known. See, they would have just taken her body away, and you would have never really registered in your mind. See, you're grieving her. She meant a lot to you.
She does. And when you talk about memories, I think about the times that she was beaten, you know. I grew up in a family that was a lot of violence. She suffered a lot, physically and mentally. And I never really had an ideal of what love was. I never thought I would find love. But I did, and there was a lot of issues that I had to work out in my life, and some of the, I guess, a lot of baggage I brought into my marriage.
Sure, a lot of that stuff from the memories, right?
Yes.
From way back then.
Mm-hmm.
So you're a fortunate man to have found a relationship that satisfies you now, right?
Well, that's funny that you mention it, but I found it, and I found it not only in my wife, but in her family,
mm-hmm.
who have really shown me that.
So when you were a kid, you saw a family that was dysfunctional and violent, and you looked at it and you said, this is not what love is, this feels terrible. And your definition of love became an embracing family. When you found your wife, you found a somewhat embracing person, but your definition of love itself was the family that loves each other, and you found that in a group of people. You see how your memory of this kind of toxic environment that you had determined what you would be calling love, and the true love that you feel is not just the love with your wife, but this huge love that you have with her family as well. What a nice thing for you.
Yes. I think I'm very fortunate in that.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to take up too much more time, but I just thank you for...
Well, Nelson, you're an important man, so you're not just taking up time. You know? It's quite beautiful. I thank you for calling in.
Take care.
Sure. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. See how the memories shape the definition of love. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. 212-209-2900.
Hello?
Hello.
This is Skates.
Hiya, Skates.
I have a very important story to tell you that combines memory and love. My grandma, she was the sunshine of my life. And I had no doubt whatsoever that she loved me. She never said it in words, and she didn't talk too much. She talked mostly German, but she had a very poor memory because she lost her first husband in World War One, I guess. And then she lost her second husband to pneumonia when she came from Germany to the United States, and she went into a deep depression, and they institutionalized her and gave her very serious shock treatment. So she came to live with me when I was 6 months old, and she didn't have much memory about any of her life, except she loved me very much. And how did I know that? I knew it by the way that she treated me. She never once in her life said to me that she loved me, except on her dying bed. But she treated me with great respect and kindness, and she really gave me the standard for love, because there wasn't that kind of love in the household. And it's very interesting because she had no memory, and our conversations were very small ones. We would just spend time together. And
it's more of a feeling than it is the way you would talk to each other. It was the sense you had, you know? And the one thing you had with your grandmother, Skates, that you didn't feel anywhere is you felt safe with her.
Yeah.
And your definition of love now is wherever you feel safe.
You think that's all it is?
I'm pretty sure, because I've met you and I met the man you're with, and I know that you feel safe with him.
Yeah.
And that's a great definition, you know what I mean?
It is. But also there's something else I feel very strongly about that people get confused about. Because love is not just a sentiment. Love could be a sentiment, but sentiment without action is not love.
What do you mean, action? Why do you have to have action?
Well, you got to show a person that you love them.
Uh-huh. You got to show some people that you love them.
Well, the persons that you truly love, the persons that are most important to you.
So you think it's important, you know, Skates, to you, it is very important for you to know that you are loved. You know, but I know people who feel loved by other people, and it's not demonstrative. It's not demonstrated.
Yeah.
But it's, so what we could do is, by each of our definitions, we can say we have a formula, but that it's not a formula for the whole world.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
Yeah.
I should let everybody know that Skates is going to be doing, we're going to have a recording of Skates, who has done a special program with me talking about a certain thing. In a couple of weeks, we'll be playing that. So, Skates, that's, thanks for going with the tolerance of that. We postponed that for 2 weeks, but it'll be around the week of March 26th.
How could I change that part of me so that, let's say, I have a bunch of friends that they say they love me, but I don't see them. How could I take comfort in that?
Take comfort in what?
Well, you say that not everybody's formula for love means that it has to be demonstrative.
Yep. Well, let me tell you what. You hang up and I'm going to read something, okay?
Okie dokie.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Here's something that somebody sent me. And I don't have the author's name. She said, I know now that love has many faces. The hand that hit me as a child had loved me despite the blows. The hands that never hugged me loved me despite that coldness. It made my meals, did my laundry, started a garden for me. Because those were the only acts of affection those hands knew how to afford. The hands that threw away my life savings loved me, despite the irresponsibility. The hands that did not pick up the phone to accompany me in my darkest hour loved me, despite the lack of time and ability to find the right words. Loved me, they did too, in their own fashion, however, they could afford to. Because I know now that love is like money to many. They can't give more than what's in their personal accounts. And unlike bank accounts where figures show clear deficits, hearts that lack are not as apparent to the observer and far less to the account holder. Love is a strange definition. Love doesn't have to be one particular thing. To each person, it's something a little different. We're going to take a short break. And I tell you, my friends, we're all a little different. So we're going to take a short break. When we come back, the voice you're going to hear, for your own curiosity, is Tom Waits doing something very special and very timely. I'll be back with you in a couple of minutes.
Those
Tom Waits, Somewhere, from the Blue Valentine album. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Did you ever get the feeling that you don't fit in anywhere, that you don't know where you are, that you don't know how you're going to connect? That how's it going to come to you? Well, you know. And you keep hoping for love and keep hoping to find it. I mean, it seems perfectly natural that we would want, the ultimate goal would be to find a bonding mate so that we could be safe. But beyond safety, what else is there? You know, there's union, there's joining. Going back to what I was reading before, let me continue this about someone who wrote this letter about love. And here's what she said. She said, whatever love people have, unsure how much they actually have, how to gain more, and if they must, they dole it out ever so carefully. She said, if it were a street vendor offering a 10-cent discount on my breakfast, I might recognize that as a form of love. If it's somebody who is picking up something off the street to just make the street a little neater, that might be a love form. It could be my child openly stomping off and slamming the door to cool off instead of either agreeing with me in silence or resentment or just appeasing me. That could be love. It could be an outer circle friend who regularly remembers to send me an uplifting message. It does not need to be a lover devoted to me all the time. A friend who's available 24/7, a parent who understands my view constantly, a spouse who adjusts to my every flaw effortlessly, or a child who is obedient and grateful every day. That's not what love is to me. It doesn't have to be. Because I see now, she says, that love wears too many disguises and I often miss them because I'm looking for love unconditionally, in my quest for unconditional love. I'll repeat that. I look for love conditionally in my quest for unconditional love. In my longing to be loved without expectations pinned on me, I love conditionally by only accepting love that I could recognize beyond the disguise it wears. I expect too much. Instead, I will do well from this point onward to love unconditionally by accepting that love could look like just like anything. I have a feeling that as I open my mind and heart to this possibility, it may be just that I will find unconditional love and I seek everywhere in and around me. I know someone who at Christmas time, this is a little side, at Christmas time they share the most lavish, lavish presents. At Christmas time, Valentine's Day, it's usually, you know, big deal. And then I know another couple where they give each other socks. And the socks have so much more love in it. Looking for love this way, I will at last find the amazing reciprocity of love. I will find at long last not the love I am looking for, but the love that is looking for me. So, my friends, may you find love, but may you let love find you. This is Armand DeMille with you. It's a positive mind. I don't have the author because it was sent to me without that. I will get that to you. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Hello there. 212-209-2900.
Hi
there.
Armand.
Hi there.
Hi, Armand. This is Tony Maiulo from New Jersey. How are
hey,
you?
Hey, Tony. How nice to hear from you.
Thank you, Armand. I love what you're saying, and I'm feeling more from what I hear from you. That's my GPS unit talking. You might hear it speak sometimes. I'll drive very carefully.
Does your GPS love you? You know, in a funny way, your GPS does love you, doesn't it? It keeps you safe. It tells you where to go. It says, you know, please prepare to make a right turn.
It does in a very, it does love me, and I love it. I want to be giving love, and I'm very careful about giving love. I have friends, and I like to keep my friends, but I'm not out there looking for action. I feel like I'm ready to give love, and that's what I wanted to call and say.
Well, yeah, but there's a problem, Tony. You know, the problem is sometimes when you give love and or you give something that you think is a loving thing and the person doesn't necessarily receive it because it's not in their tempo, it's not in their timing. You know what I mean? So, in other words, you could, when that happens, there's a certain thing about it that's very funny. It's like doing what you do for somebody, giving them a gift. It's like offering somebody a sandwich. And you offer somebody some food and say, here, taste this. And I'm one of these guys who, whenever I have great food, I want to share it. So I say to a friend of mine, here, taste this, you know, and it'd be one of the most delicious things that I ever tasted. And my friend will say to me, no, I'm not in the mood. And I'll say, what do you mean you're not in the mood? Taste this. It's great. And they'll say, no, I don't want to put that in my mouth because I have perfect taste in my mouth right now. And there's a part of me that just feels like, but you have to accept this.
I know what you're saying.
I know you
I
do.
I feel that too. I could feel that too.
Yeah, I know you do. And you've learned a lot about that.
Yeah, mostly from getting hurt and from feeling rejected. But I know I really, really push it out there. I really want to push. If I feel that love, I really want to push it out there.
Yeah. So instead, perhaps there's a way to radiate it and leave it as an invitation and let people come to you as opposed to you going to them.
That's an interesting concept, Armand, because I know I just have that habit of, let me go find it there. Let me go run there.
Yeah.
So, and just be okay where I'm at.
You're a beautiful guy, Tony, and a fine photographer.
Thank you, Armand.
Hey, but listen, wait, one more thing. When you send me your photographs, would you reduce the size of your files? See, there's another beautiful thing you do. There's a good example. Oh, that's great.
Tell me.
Here's a good example of love from Tony Maiulo. Ready? When you send me a photograph, which you send me, which is a loving photograph because you take beautiful pictures, you always send it in a file that's too large.
Okay.
So my computer can't open it. And when it does, I can't see it. It comes out at me. As opposed to, if you made that file smaller and sent it, I could receive it easier. Isn't that beautiful? It's a perfect example.
This is not a metaphor. This would be a simile that you're expressing to me.
Absolutely.
I'll do what I can to look into reducing the size of the photograph.
And thinking about the fact that
I love you anyway, Armand.
Yes, and thinking about the fact that when you send a photograph, send it so that the receiver could receive it gracefully.
I like that.
Yeah, I love what we're doing. You're a brave man. Thank you so much for calling in, Tony.
You're a beautiful man, Armand. I love you.
Thank you. Bye-bye. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. You're on the air. Hi there. You're on the air.
Hi, Dr. DeMille. How are you?
Good. Who is this?
This is Simone.
Hello, Simone.
Hi. How are you? I love your program. I dream that one day I have enough money to see you. I have a quick question. I'm going to be 51 years old. I never saw my mother. I tried several times. I'm traveling tomorrow to Brazil, and I made contact, and she's accepted to see me for the first time. Several times I tried before, she said no. She never wanted to see me. Last year, I lost my father. My father died. And now, after breast cancer, I want to see her. But today is the day before I'm traveling. Tomorrow, I'm heading to Brazil 6:30 in the morning, and I'm thinking, I'm questioning my feelings. I'm feeling numb. Before was a lot of excitement to see how she looked like. Who's this woman? Mm-hmm. Why she did this? And now I feel numb, not too sure, and I don't know if it's fear. I don't know how to define this feelings, numbness. Would be good for me to see her. How should I react?
Sure, I understand. Going numb is one of our safeties. It's one of our protections. You know, one of the things that an animal does is it has a fight. It could either fight with something, or it could run away, or it could freeze. And you're in a freeze position. You're in a position where you've gone numb because this way you can't get hurt. And it's all right. I mean, it's all right to go this way because when you get there, you'll decide whether or not you can melt or not. You know, you'll decide whether you can open or not. But, of course, it feels this way now because you're in danger. You know, you have no idea if you're going to be received or not received.
Very hard to understand. I have two wonderful, lovely daughter and one granddaughter and one grandson. How can somebody do that? And
do what?
Left the child like she left me close to the river. That the way river can sweep me inside the river, nobody ever see me. Fortunately, some people who work in the farm, they found me. And
yeah.
I'm just think over and over how a mother can do this.
How did you know your mother left you by the stream?
This is the story they told me.
That's right.
I grew up.
It's a story they told you when you grew up.
Right.
So you don't know if it's true or not, do you?
I have a feeling it's true.
Right.
However,
I know. Of course you do.
Yeah, that's what they told me. However, who knows what her feeling is? I feel sorry for her, too, because she's had cancer now, and I decided to see her for her own sake.
Okay, but keep in mind, you painted your life around the image of a mother who took a baby and put the baby down by the river, which mothers don't do. I mean, mothers do crazy things, but they don't put them down by the river that often. But the story that's carried you to a point where you built your whole life around it. And here's what I would suggest to you.
Right, this is what I need your suggestion.
Yeah, I need you to go there and to let everything be new, let everything be different, to let it go and just say, who is this person? Who is this person? And see what you could feel. And whatever you feel, you feel. And you know, you're probably going to get angry because she sounds like she was a pretty lousy mother anyway. And it's okay to get angry. Even if she has cancer, you can get angry.
Yeah, I guess we all human beings, normal to get angry.
Yeah.
I thank you so much for your kindness.
Now listen, Simone, when you come back,
you
make an appointment to see me, and you pay any amount of money you want. You can pay me in reals.
Oh, I would love to do that. I'll certainly will.
And I'll see you when you come back, okay?
Thank you so much for your kindness. Keep doing it. Wonderful Bible BA I do it for everybody.
Sure.
Thank you, Dr. DeMille.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I just wanted to share that there was a lady I was on the line not too long ago. She said she felt that love was an action accordance with a...
Yes, Kate said it had to do with action and behavior, yes.
Right, and I feel that she was right in that maybe love is something that was here before us and it's going to be here after us and it's not something left for us to define. And it's something that we need to seek out and not put our own definition to because we're not of that level yet.
What an interesting concept. What's your name?
Gregory Valestin.
Gregory, listen, that's an interesting concept. So you say love in itself is God. Love in itself is energy. Love
I'm trying to say that without using God.
Yeah, okay, without using any kind of a religious thing.
Right.
You're saying, love is there, and that if we're lucky, we can allow ourselves to enter the field of love which existed before us and will exist after us. And by trying to define it, pull it, isolate it, trying to find it and grab it and say, this is what it is and this is how it's got to be, we're kind of stepping outside of the reality of what's really there.
You know what it is? I feel that maybe if you leave it, not saying you, but if somebody leaves it up to themselves to define it, they could place a false definition on what love is.
Absolutely.
If you leave it open to be whatever, then... A man punching on his woman, he could say that, he loves her. And that, I have four shortcomings with the way I express it to her, but I do love her. And what I feel is that somebody should have the right to say, no, that isn't love, in any way, shape, or form. And that's just an extreme example, but I feel that way with many things. Like I said, I'm going back to what that lady said. I feel that that's what true love is, and there's different forms of it. And
well, let me ask you something. I dislike the word true love.
Okay.
Because those two words don't go together.
Really?
Because I think nobody has a definition. You know what I mean? I don't think anybody has a real definition. But let me ask you about you in your life.
Okay.
Who is the closest person to you in your life?
I have to say my mother was the closest thing to my life.
And she died?
No, she's alive.
She's alive. And she's the closest one, right?
Yes. She for me, represents what true love is because she fled her country with...
Okay, wait. Before you go into a deal, you don't need the detail. The thing you have is your mom and you are very close.
Right.
And can anybody give you a love that's close to her?
No, I can't say that anybody can, no.
So there it is. There you have a definition of love.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a definition of love, and it's a tough definition because your definition just simply says... I've got to have this thing that's like what I have with my mom. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that.
Uh-huh.
Maybe that's the way it is.
It's not. My thing is that I don't want love to be... Love to me, that word and the reality behind it is being taken from granted in this day and age, and that people run around and do what they want to do and put the label of love behind it. And I feel that if we have a fine line to what love is...
Are you ever going to... Do you think you're going to have children?
Oh, yeah, I would love children, yes.
You'd love to. How are you going to do that?
With somebody that I love. I want to start a family with them.
So you want to open your heart to somebody who could come along, who could love you the way your mom does.
Absolutely. I hope that somebody could fill her shoes.
Yeah, that's a problem,
Yeah.
You might have to get a different pair of shoes.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, thanks for calling in, Gregory.
Thank you.
Okay, bye. Good to talk to you.
You too, bye.
Armand DeMille here with you at The Positive Mind. A long time ago, I wrote a poem. It was a child's poem, but I wrote it. Let's see now. Let's see. And this is, Dieter Middleston Scheid. No. So I'm going to take one more call, 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. I'll play that for you another time. 212-209-2900. One more call. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Hello there. I know you're there.
Hello.
There it is. Hi there.
Hey, Armand. I have, how much time do I have so I can tailor my how much I'm going to say what I'm going to say?
Sure. You have 3 minutes.
Okay. I don't want to give my name. A lot of people know my voice, and I know I'm going to be deeply embarrassed at the end of this call, but I think this is going to be beneficial to a lot of men out there.
Sure.
Okay. And I did see you last year on Valentine's Day, so that might give you a clue as to who I am. I have almost accommodated myself to the notion of not having love and not having sex. And I think to get to the crux of the matter, I have suffered from dysfunction for many reasons, and I'm not going to detail them. There's no time for that. But I also think that if I had lived in another time where sex were not so readily available and or expected, I might have found love more easily because I wouldn't have had to dealt with the pressure of performance.
Yeah, sure.
And you know, we have all these notions, and I wish Jane Sewell, you know, the chocolate lady,
sure,
who has some interesting things to say, would listen to my perspective, because men have great variance in the way they perceive life and the way
so
they
you
have
find. Let me ask you, since we're down to 1 minute.
Sure.
You are cheated because you're in the wrong generation. There's a world that you could have lived in where expectations would have been less and love would have been more available to you.
Right, and it almost seems like it's corny if you're romantic, but then you're supposed to be totally sexual or not, or some combination between. It's like heads you win and tails you lose, you know.
No, I hear you.
So it's sort of Hobson's choice here, and you see these commercials around for erection enhancers. It almost seems is that the sum total
of
necessity in life?
Since we're out of time.
You know?
We will have to pick this up another
time. We'll pick this up, Arma.
You know, it's great to hear from you. And yeah. Happy second Valentine's Day for you.
Well, thank you.
You know, you're a lovely man, and it's very difficult to define and find, you know? So I have to go. We have to get going. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m. with more of this exciting programming. Nice to be with you, my friends. I will be back with you on Tuesday. If you want to get a copy of today's show, go to thepositivemind.com.